On this 15th day of June 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized. Text number 50. 50. Buddhiyukto jahatiha.
Buddhiyukto jahatiha.
Ubhe sukrita duskrite. Tasmad yogaya yujasva. Yoga karma sukaushalam. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad reactions, even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. Purport. Since time immemorial, each living entity has accumulated the various reactions of his good and bad work. As such, he is continuously ignorant of his real constitutional position. One's ignorance can be removed by the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, which teaches one to surrender unto Lord Sri Krishna in all respects and become liberated from the chained victimization of action and reaction, birth after birth. Arjuna is therefore advised to act in Krishna consciousness, the purifying process of resultant action. Om jnana timirandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmiditam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So again, we are hearing about buddhi yoga. In this case, buddhi yukta means one who is engaged in buddhi yoga, which is non-different from bhakti yoga. And that's why Srila Prabhupada translates it as such, one who is engaged in devotional service. So the idea is that we come into this particular lifetime bearing a burden of many, many lifetimes worth of good and bad reactions. Whenever we do anything outside of Krishna consciousness, then there is a reaction set up. Suppose you perform some what we call sinful activity against the laws of God and the laws of nature. So first thing that happens, you plant the seed of the reaction, bija. And then there's also the kuta. Kuta is a tendency to do it again. Those things happen simultaneously. Now, the seed of reaction you don't see right away. Just like you plant a seed in the ground, you water it, nothing happens right away. But gradually, it blossoms and comes up, and then there's a fruit or a flower that comes up. So in the case of the a sinful activity, that seed is planted, and it may fructify in this lifetime, or it may fructify in the next lifetime, or some future lifetime. And so when the result of that sinful activity is not yet manifest, it's called aprarabdha. And when it finally manifests, it's called prarabdha karma. And Prabhupada makes a statement in another place that when you see someone who's, say, beset by legal difficulties or disease, you know, a lifetime full of disease, or even at a certain point comes down with it, or any other thing happens, this is a sinful activity, this is a sinful reaction, fructifying, from this life or previous lifetime. Now, the problem with, there are different ways of counteracting these sinful reactions. There is a process of atonement, which involves austerity, sacrifice, self-control, and these type of things, in which you can mitigate these results of the sinful activity, performing some atonement. But the problem is you still have that kuta. You still have that tendency to commit the activity again. And this is the problem with any other means of counteracting sin besides devotional service. Because devotional service not only counteracts the sinful reaction, but it also burns or negates the tendency to commit the sin again. So this is the only means, really, of coming to that point of freedom from reaction. Now, we're talking about sin, but there's also the other side. That's why he says here, sukrita and duskrita. Both of them need to be gotten rid of, jahati. Because even your good activities, you have to take birth in order to get the results. Suppose you're a very charitable, kind person in this lifetime. Okay, very good. So you're not going to suffer in hell. You won't be punished. You'll get birth in a nice family, and then you'll get the results of that activity. You'll also, say, get a good education, you have beautiful features, you make some money, or you're born into a wealthy family. But you're still bound in the material life. And who knows what will happen the next lifetime. By bad association, you may start performing sin, and then you'll go down and you'll suffer. And even if you're to the point of so pious and so strict that you're able to go to the heavenly planets, still you're within the material realm. You're enjoying the results of that piety, and then it's spent. You're like spending it, just like putting money in the bank, in the credit card, and eventually you spend it and it's gone, and the credit card no longer is valid, and you have to come back to work. It means you have to come back to this world and engage in karma. So Buddha yoga, by engaging in devotional service, you get rid of both the good and bad. You're negating them. And you're not incurring any more karma, good or bad. This is that state of naishkarmya I mentioned yesterday. So this is the art of work. That's why Prabhupada says here, the art of all work. Or Krishna says, karma sukaushalam. What is that art of living in this world like the lotus floating in the water, so you're not entangled? That's devotional service. Now, why is that? Because the motive is different. The motive is simply to serve Krishna. There's no personal motive. And you're acting according to the laws of Krishna, his desire, the ultimate law. And therefore, you remain free from entanglement. That'll be explained in the next verse. No entanglement. So, you know, fight for the sake of yoga. Engage in activity out of a matter of duty or because I want it, not on your own account, and therefore you don't have any attachment to the result. If it's a good result, fine, offer it to Krishna. If it doesn't work out, you tried, the best you could, and you're not disappointed. And this is why in bhakti yoga the activity itself is the perfection. And so that's how we can live in this world and remain unentangled. And not only remain unentangled, but disentangle ourselves. We're already entangled because we're all attached to various things. We're carrying forward this burden, if you will, of karma, good and bad. So as Lord Brahma says famously in his Brahma Samhita, yas atvindra gopam atavendra mahosva karma. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. So Lord Brahma says, I worship Govinda, the original person. From Lord Indra down to the little Indra Gopa germ, everyone is reaping the or enjoying or suffering the fruits of their activity. Swakarma bunda anurupa pala. They're bound up by the fruits of their activity. Bunda anurupa pala bhajam atanoti. But karmani nirdahati kintu de bhakti bhajam. By Govinda. The whole thing goes acting. All of these, for the one who is worshipping him, bhakti bhajam, he burns to ashes the seeds of all that karma. And it cannot fructify. So this is one of the main benefits, if you will. From the material point of view, this is a tremendous benefit of devotional service. Ultimately, the devotees are not engaging in devotion consciously for that benefit. But that's one of the side benefits. Liberation. We're talking about liberation here. If you're not bound by any karma or any desire in this material world, you're free. You're liberated. You're free from the bondage of this world. Whether you're out of the body or in the body. You can be liberated even while in the material body. Iha yasya hare dase karmana manasagada nikalasupyavastastu jivan mukta sa uchite. The word jivan mukta refers to one who's still in this world but is liberated. So what's the condition? What is the qualification? Iha yasa, whoever's activities, iha yasa, karma namanasagira. Iha yasa, karma namanasagira means with the senses, with the mind, and with the words. Is simply engaged in the service to Krishna. Then one is liberated even in this world. You see. So, for a devotee, we're trying to attain that state of pure devotion to Krishna. That's ultimately what motivates us. But we should know that along the way, you also get liberated from the bondage of this material world. So he's just starting his instruction here to Arjuna, and he's encouraging him that you simply fight this battle because on the sense of duty, as a matter of yoga, and you'll never incur any sin. Remember, Arjuna was afraid of that. He was afraid of incurring sin and inducing others to become sinful. Because if he killed all the men, the women would become unprotected and there would be degradation. You know, so he didn't want to be responsible for that. He's thinking, I will be responsible. But Krishna is saying, no, you won't. You're doing it on my account. You're not responsible. And I will take charge of everything and make it all auspicious. And for your as far as you go, you won't be incurring any sin. Ube sukhita dushkate, it'll all be finished for you. So this is encouraging. Arjuna is giving us, Krishna is giving us instruction here. The art of work, this phrase is very famous. You know, how to work, how to act in this world without being entangled. If we need instruction, we need a formula for that. And that formula is bhakti yoga under the guidance according to rules and regulations given by the Shastra. Any comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you. I was curious as far as like the pre-destiny of things. Like I've heard that you can't enjoy like a drop more satisfaction than you're meant to enjoy. Yeah. I'm wondering where that line gets drawn and if it's true for the not good or bad type of enjoyment.
The idea is that we have kind of written the program, if you will. You know, we know about computer programs. You've kind of written the program in your previous life for the amount of happiness and the amount of distress you're going to experience materially. So, of course, you should know that when that you surrender to Krishna, you know, when you're involved in Krishna consciousness, then he arranges these differently. Because this is talking about material happiness and material distress. So it doesn't necessarily mean the amount, you know, externally, oh, this person is very rich, therefore they're very happy. This person is very poor, therefore they're very... It doesn't work like that. It's really a question of the, you know, how much joy and how much misery you're going to feel, you know. So this is it's a famous statement first made in the Bhagavatam by Narada Muni. He says, Tasyaiva heto prayateta kovido nalabhyate yad pramatam upar yada talabhyate dukkavadanya taksukham kalena sarvata gabhira ranasa. So he expresses this idea that you mentioned there. He says, therefore, he says, one should strive, one who is intelligent, a kovida, should strive for that which you cannot obtain by going all the way to the heavenly planets or down to the hellish planets. It's outside of this realm. Upayada. Because talabhyate dukkavadanyataksukam, you will attain, labhyate, a certain amount of dukkha and a certain amount of sukha. According to what? Kalena sarvatra gabhira rangasa. According to the force of time and karma, which acts very subtly, gabhira rangasa, but very unstoppably. Rangasa means there's a force there that cannot be stopped. You see? So we have a certain amount of happiness, a certain amount of distress. So there's no point to waste our material, our human life, in striving to what? Maximize the material happiness and minimize the material distress. And in the course of doing that, especially in this day and age, performing all kinds of sin, that'll ensure us another body and another round of suffering. You see how it doesn't make any sense. So on the material level, we have a certain amount of stuff due to us. So the devotee says, okay, it's going to come anyway. you know, and the misery is going to come. So let me just serve Krishna. That's the thing that's beyond the bounds of the material world. Narada Muni is telling Vyasadeva to write the Bhagavatam and teach people how they can transcend this, you know, heavenly planets, hellish planets, and all this business, and get back to the spiritual world. Because up until that point, Vyasadeva had written the Vedas, but a lot of it had to do with, as we just read, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, the three modes of nature. You know, increasing the mode of goodness, going to the heavenly planets, you know, kind of sub-religious activity, moral activity. But all of that just keeps you bound in this world. It may increase your material pleasure. I encourage him to come to this side. Come to this side.
Okay.
Yeah. You may, you know, we have a certain amount of independence, right? So we'll do a good act in this lifetime. So we understand from the Veda, okay, that'll increase my pleasure in the next lifetime. I'll be born in a good family or whatever, you know. I understand that. But Krishna is saying here, don't waste your time with that. And Narada Muni is saying the same thing. Because it's like going from the, you know, you're in jail, you're in the prison, and you say, this is a lousy cell. Let me try to improve my case so I can become a trustee and I can type all day for the warden and have a few privileges. Why not do that by which you can get out of the prison entirely? You see? It's simply a waste of your efforts. So that's the idea. Yes, we have a certain amount of material happiness and a certain amount of material distress. So it's coming. So forget about that. Instead, do what you can do for your eternal benefit. That's the idea. Yes, Alpa.
I have a technical question. What exactly is considered devotional service?
Devotional service? That's a good question. Rupa Goswami, maybe we can get a book for the guests here. We have so many books. Now, what page are we on?
We're at text 15.
I know, but give me a page number. You got it, okay. So what is devotional service? Okay, well, it's defined by Rupa Goswami in his Nectar of Devotion, or Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. Anyabhilashita sunyam gyanakarma janavritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti uchite. Bhakti uttama, actually. That's the uttama one. Another similar verse. Sarvapadi vinimuktam tatpatatvena nirmala mrishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti uchite. Okay? So let's look at these two verses. Now, devotional service is an activity, just in general, in which one is bhakti yoga, linking up to Krishna or God through the activities of one's senses and mind. In other words, we could be reading so many books right now, but we're reading Bhagavad Gita. That's devotional service. If you're reading another kind of book that has nothing to do with Krishna, nothing to do with this science, then that's not devotional service. That's maya. That's something else, karma, you see. So, but In our society, in this line, we are concerned mostly with pure devotional service. Because devotional service can be engaged in for also material motives. You see? That's a kind of service. But it's not loving devotional service. It's not done out of love. You know? It's the service that you get when you go to the service station. I mean, fill up your gas. I think they still have, if you pay an extra dollar or more per gallon, they'll come out and they'll fill it for you, right? Or you go to the restaurant. Can I serve you? You know, there's the waiter. So the illusion is, yes, they like me, so they're going to serve me. Yeah, right, because you're going to give a big tip. You know, so that's motivated devotional service. So Rupa Goswami is defining the whole motive, you know, the theme of this sampradaya is completely unmotivated devotional service. So this is the definition. Anya abhilashita shunyam. So means devoid of any other desire, other than to please Krishna. Just like a mother serves a child, a baby is newborn, doesn't know anything from anything. So the mother is completely focused on the welfare of this child. Is he well fed? Is he warm enough? Is he healthy? Is he happy? You know, he or she, right? And completely selfless. The baby may not even know who the mother is or what her name is or anything. It's selfless. Isn't, even if it's, that's the standard. you know, the closest in the material sphere for the standard. So, anyabhilashita shunyam, and then he defines, well, what kind of other desires? Jnana, karma, and adi, etc. So, jnana refers to cultivation of knowledge for the purpose of liberation. Now, I've just been talking about how you can become liberated by acting in yoga. But ultimately, pure devotion, you don't even care about liberation. You just care about Krishna's pleasure. You know, it's pure love. So, and what to speak of karma? Karma means fruit of activity, that you'll enjoy the fruits. No covering of the devotion by that. Then, okay, that's negative. What's positive? Anukulena Krishna Anushilanam. Anukulena means favorably for Krishna, for his pleasure. Krishna Anushilanam. Anushilanam is behavior. In other words, activity of all the senses. Now, the other verse, which Rupa Goswami quotes next, very shortly thereafter, in his beginning of the Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, he defines it a little differently, but it's the same idea. Sava upadi vini muktam. So here's that word muktam again. And he's saying, free from all upadis. Now, what is an upadi? Upadi is a designation that we place on ourselves that's alien to our spiritual being. We are spirit souls, as we just learned that in this chapter, right? Eternal. And we're part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit. There's an infinite Supreme Spirit who is a person. You know, that's like inconceivable in our present state, but that's the fact. So we are minute persons, each one of us. You know, and our natural role, just like the hand's natural role as part of the body, is to serve the interests of the whole body. Right? So similarly, we are meant to serve the interests of the supreme whole. And in doing so, we actually serve our own best interests. So that's understood. So all of these upadis. What's an upadi? I'm a 63-year-old white male resident of San Diego, California. That's a designation. And then, you know, what's my weight? You know, what's my IQ? A million different things on the basis of this body. Eye color, hair color, you know, all this stuff. Relationships, you know. All of that is temporary. It's material. It's a designation. And when I think of myself in those terms, that's called an upadi, a designation I placed on myself, which alienates me, if you will, from my real activity, my real self, swarup, my swarup. So it's a sarva upadi vinimuktam, tatparat vena, nirmalam, completely purified of this. Then what do I do in this identity now that I have? Rishikesha sevanam. So Rishikesh is a name for Krishna, a name for God. It means the master of the senses. So he's the master of our senses, whether we use them in his service or not. But when we actually use our senses, which includes the mind, in his service, then that's called bhakti. Rishikesha sevanam. Rishika is a word for senses. So Rishikesha, the Lord, Rishikena with the senses, Rishikesha sevanam. Sevanam means service, same word. Bhakti ruchate, that's said to be bhakti. So that's what devotional service means. Now, practically speaking, you know, what kind of do we use? There's nine basic divisions, you know. Shavanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasim, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. So the first service we do is hearing. And you're doing it now. Hopefully I'm saying stuff that's in line with the Bhagavad Gita. So you're hearing, you know, words about Krishna. That's service. That's the most important service. Because on the basis of that, everything flows. The mind becomes purified and you learn. So hearing and then chanting. Those two are the foundation. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. Hearing about Vishnu or Krishna, chanting about Vishnu. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, and then Smaranam, remembering him. Just remembering Krishna is part of devotional service. And then Pada Sevanam, serving the lotus feet, going on the altar sometimes, whatever. Archanam, worshiping like that. Vandanam, prayers, obeisances. Sakyam, becoming a friend of the Lord. Dasyam, considering himself a servant and friend. And then Atmanivedanam, full surrender. There's nine different divisions. Each of them has many subdivisions. So really, devotional service is meant to occupy every moment of one's life from waking to sleeping. And if you do that, even when you sleep, you're remembering and you're serving. Because it's natural. It's actually our natural state. We're all kind of in a diseased condition. This whole business of sense gratification, of desiring to not serve Krishna's senses, but to serve our own senses, that's a diseased state. It's unnatural. Because it's so common, we think that, well, that's normal. But it's not normal for the soul. The soul is meant to have transcendental senses, which are completely attuned to Krishna's pleasure. And what state do you find yourself in? Absolute bliss. Because that's really the self of the self. When we serve Krishna, we serve our real self. When we serve our senses, we serve our non-self. And that's why misery comes. Because you can never be happy. You're never satisfied. There's never enough in a sense gratification. Kind of a long answer. It's a good question, though. Yes, Prabhu.
Why are we happy serving someone else instead of ourselves?
Yes. As I said at the end there, the reality is that the Supreme Self, that's why he's called the Paramatma. You know, one of Krishna's manifestations is called Paramatma. Within our heart, we have a manifestation of God. Is really our self. In other words, we are just the analogy of the hand. The hand doesn't, you know, if it doesn't do what we want it to do, it's diseased, right? It may be paralyzed. It's not in a healthy state. So if the hand, imagine that the senses had their own intelligence. And so the hand says, why should I just always work so hard, make money, you know, buy food, and then give it to the stomach? The stomach is enjoying everything. I want to enjoy separately, you see? So the hand tries to enjoy a banana on its own. What happens? Makes a mess, right? So actually the story, the senses went on strike. So we're working for the stomach, you know, we're not getting anything. So the feet didn't walk, the hands didn't grasp, and all the senses were on strike. But what happened? Then the food didn't go to the stomach, and all the senses became weak, because they're hooked up to the stomach, you know? Oh, so they said, this is foolish. We can only really be nourished and benefit by doing our function properly and serving the stomach. So it's the same way with Krishna Bhakti. And we can attest to that. You know, even devotees have been doing this for a couple of years, or like myself, many years, 38 years, you know, that there's a great happiness in doing this, in forgetting yourself, so to speak, and just meditating on Krishna and serving his, glorifying, chanting Hare Krishna. Why does that bring happiness? Who can say? What's the, you know, there's no logic to it. And it's because, you know, there's a potency in that name. You're linking up to Krishna, the reservoir of all pleasure, the source of all energy, and it's natural. Suddenly you wake up from a long, long sleep. The soul has been, you know, in this artificial situation for a long time. You're actually serving your best self-interest when you serve the Supreme Self. There's a nice verse written by a great sage named Madhavendra Puri. And he says, Kama dinam, forgive me, I always think in Sanskrit, I'll give it a chance. Kama dinam katina katita palita dhuni deshas. Tesham jata maina kaduna natrapano pishanti. Utsrijayatan hadiyadupate sampratam labdha buddhis vamayatak shadunam abhayam mamli yung svatma dasi. So what this verse means is that kama dinam means the desires of the senses and etc. So it's material desire, and then there's anger, there's illusion, there's misery. So these are demands. When we're angry, say, we have to, you know, we feel we have to do something, punch someone or punch a wall or something, you know, let it out, you know. So there's a kind of a demand of anger. The anger is forcing you to do something. Same thing with lust, you know. If you feel overwhelmed by sex desire or some other desire, you have to act on it. So this devotee is saying, for so many births, I've been serving these masters, lust, anger, greed, illusion, all of these things. They haven't shown me any mercy. I'm serving them very faithfully, you know, but they keep demanding more service. And the result is misery, you know, anger. You punch someone, you kill someone. Oh, and you get arrested. Now you're in jail for 20 years. You know, I served the master and now look what happened. Then there's more misery in the jail. So he's saying, now all these masters I've been serving, they show me their mercy, yet I've kept serving them. Now I'm giving them up. I'm not serving them anymore. Why? Because my intelligence has awoken by this knowledge. What to do then? Because our natural... So he says, he approaches Krishna. Now please engage me in your service and I'll be happy. And that's actually what happens. If you serve, Krishna, what is Krishna's demand? Just think of me. Become my devotee. Hear about me. Glorify me. Do my service. And you find yourself pleased because Krishna's in the heart. Yeah, it's not, it can't be understood really logically, ultimately, but it can be experienced naturally. Anyway, let's go on. We have another few minutes here. All right, text 51. Karmajam buddhi yuktahi. Palam chukva manishinaha. Janma bandha vinirmukta. Padam gacchanchanamayan. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. Purport, the liberated living entities belong to that place where there are no material miseries. The Bhagavatam 10.14.58 says, Samashitaye padapallava plavam mahapadam punhyasho marare bhavambudhi vatsapadam padam 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 yan vipadam natesham. You know this one?
It's just beautiful.
Yeah, that's a great word. For one who has accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Mukunda, or the giver of mukti, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's footprint. Parampadam, or the place where there are no material miseries, or Vaikuntha, is his goal, not the place where there is danger at every step of life. Owing to ignorance, one does not know that this material world is a miserable place where there are dangers at every step. Out of ignorance only, less intelligent persons try to adjust to the situation by fruitive activities, thinking that the resultant actions will make them happy. They do not know that no kind of material body anywhere within this universe can give life without miseries. The miseries of life, namely birth, death, old age, and diseases, are present everywhere within the material world. But one who understands his real constitutional position as the eternal servitor of the Lord, and thus knows the position of the personality of Godhead, engages himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Consequently, he becomes qualified to enter into the Vaikuntha planets, where there is neither material, miserable life, nor the influence of time and death. To know one's constitutional position means to know also the sublime position of the Lord. One who wrongly thinks that the living entity's position and the Lord's position are on the same level is to be understood to be in darkness and therefore unable to engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. He becomes the Lord himself and thus paves the way for the repetition of birth and death. But one who, understanding that his position is to serve, transfers himself to the service of the Lord, at once becomes eligible for Vaikuntha Loka. Service for the cause of the Lord is called Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga, or in plain words, devotional service of the Lord. So, Karma Jam, Buddhi. So, what is born out of karma are palam. If you work, there's going to be some fruit. But here it says that one who is a buddhi yukta, who is engaged in devotional service with the intelligence, acting according to Krishna's desire, he gives up that pala. Now the best way to give up the fruit is to give it over for the benefit of the Lord. But in the 12th chapter, because whatever you do, don't just become greedy for the fruits of your work and become attached, because those attachments are what bring you back again for a life of misery. So by giving up the fruits of one's work, the manishina, those who are intelligent, janma bandha vinimukta, become liberated from the bondage of birth and death and rebirth. Then what happens? Padam gacchanchanamayam. They go to that place beyond all miseries. So, this world, if you live a while in this world, you see that there's really no safe place. I mean, just think of the recent tsunami. How much warning, just think of the day before the tsunami. Everybody, there's so many hundreds of thousands of Japanese living their ordinary lives, pretty secure. Japan is a pretty wealthy country, a lot of retired people. Living normally, beautiful place, near the ocean, just like we are. you know, go down to the beach, enjoy on the beach, come back, you know, like, boom, 9.2, you know, earthquake. Incredible. We've had a little, what, 7 around here. I remember it shaking, you know, the chandeliers are moving. This is a long time ago in the early 90s. Okay, it's a lot of fun. You feel like you're surfing on the, you've been around for a while, you're surfing on the, on the, on the street, you know, right on the sidewalk. Okay, you know, that's cool. Whoa, that was exciting. But that's nothing. 7 is like, you know, 100 times weaker than what they had there. It's exponential. So how frightening that is. And then comes this wave. You know, there's no stopping it. It's the force of nature. Have you ever, you know, you go down, sometimes I go down to the ocean. I don't go down that often. And just the power of that ocean. You know, those waves are just coming in forever. You know, the power, the energy, the mass, the depth of it. To remind you of Krishna, he says, the bodies of water are on the sea, right? So, and just imagine, you know, it rises up. You know, suddenly there's a wave there, 50 feet high, coming at you. What happened to your life, to your nice little secure daily life? You know, it's suddenly fear is just, it's terrible. That's the nature of this world. Now, it can come as a tsunami, and so, you know, mass destruction, or everybody has his own little story. You know, some disease, some accident, some loved one, you know, because we tie up our heart to so many directions. So, you know, this is this world. It's certified. Dukkhaliyam Ashashvatam, in the 8th chapter, Krishna says. This world is dukkhaliyam, it's abode of misery, and it's temporary, which is part of the misery. So that's the alternative to that is to rise above the modes of nature, to have a life that's spiritual, that cannot be touched. Even if you die tomorrow or in the next second, that spiritual consciousness that you develop will be there. But whatever you have materially is gone with the body. It's gone. You can't take it with you, whether you're Bill Gates or the poor beggar in the street. You go on to another chapter. You know? So now this verse, let's look at this verse. This is a wonderful verse. It's spoken in the purport here. Spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit after the whole Brahma Vimohan Leela, you know, in chapter 14. So he says, Samashita ye padapallava plavam. So a plava is a boat, you know. And padapallava refers to the lotus feet. So it means taking shelter of the lotus feet indicates service. It means that I'm your servant, you know, serving the lotus feet. It's a humble position. So this is like a boat to take you across this ocean. Now, samashita means full shelter, complete surrender. Mahatpadam. Now, Mahatpadam has different meanings. One of the meanings Prabhupada gives here, the shelter of the cosmic manifestation. Mahat can stand for Mahatattva. You know, not the devotee Mahatattva Das, but Mahatattva means the whole universe. The president here is named Mahatattva. Punya Yesho Murari. Murari is the enemy of the Mura demon. Prabhupada puts in the Mukunda here, so the same personality. Punya Yesho means just by glorifying him, you get bhakti credits. You know, punya means transcendental punya, auspiciousness or good fortune.
Blessings.
Huh?
Blessings,
yeah. Yeah. So then what happens? You're on this boat and suddenly you don't need it anymore. Because the whole ocean has shrunk down to the water, not even in a cow's hoofprint, but in a calf's hoofprint, which is even smaller. It's emphasis. So vatsapadam. Now parampadam is the transcendental world. See, this play on words here. Padam has different meanings. So padam in this context means a situation or a place in the transcendental world, the Vaikuntha. Then padam padam, the next line, last line. Step by step. You see, you're also, the pada is the foot where you rest. That's the place where you rest. Yet, vipadam, that's a word that means dangers. Natesha, not for them, those who have taken full shelter of this boat, of the lotus feet, is this place where there's danger in every step. So the very word Vaikuntha means the place beyond all anxieties. There is no place in this material world that's beyond all anxieties. No matter how wealthy you are, how beautiful you are, how powerful you are, you know it's temporary. Deep in your heart, it's not going to last. Right? That's a source of anxiety. But the devotees know, they know that their relationship with Krishna is permanent. And those who are really pure devotees who are experiencing it every moment, beyond fear. Because the fear comes from identification with the temporary. with that which is subject to destruction. Yes, yes. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, please, go. Okay, you guys believe in reincarnation, right?
Yes.
So you said if we are devotees of Krishna, we'd be spiritually liberated, but then wouldn't in our next life we lose it and then we have to regain it again?
That's a great question.
That's
a fabulous question. And that's exactly the situation that you don't go through. In other words, the great devotees, everyone dies. It means that the body is going to fall at one time or other. So let's assume for a moment, and that was the whole lesson of the first part of this chapter, that yes, we are eternal beings. That means that we reincarnate. How else can we be eternal? So we've had so many different bodies. Incarnation literally means coming into a body of flesh, karna, right? So we've had many, many, many. But the process of devotional service, or bhakti yoga, or buddhi yoga is explained here, is meant to end that process. No more material body. No more reincarnation. So you do not forget. You do not forget. The great devotees, whatever they're doing now, and you have to understand that we kind of exist on several levels. There's the mental level and inside that you're thinking of. And there's also the external thing that you're doing. Your mind, which is your what we call the subtle body, the internal body, that doesn't perish when this body goes. This is a big machine, it's going to die. But your mind and intelligence, they carry the soul to the next gross body. Now, if our mind is full of material thoughts and attachments, right? I cultivate an attachment in this lifetime. A normal thing, like for some civilization, for persons, right? I grow up, get married, have children, very attached to the children, my wife, like that extra family. They develop friends. I go. I become a grandfather, grandmother, like that. Now there's grandchildren, more attachments, right? So, so it goes on like that. Now, time goes on, time for me to die, those attachments are there. I want to be with those people, I want to experience this. Now you mix that up with your karma, you know, and you get another birth. If you're pious, you get a birth, you know, a human birth, and you continue having attachments to people and fulfilling these desires. So this is normal material life, but it's very painful. You got to go through old age, disease, death. You have to go through separation from all those people you love, you know. They die, or eventually you die. It's you know, the promise of it is ultimately broken. There's no living happily ever after on the material plane. But the spiritual plane, if you cultivate that internal life, then that takes you back to Godhead. This phrase here appears hundreds of times in Prabhupada's books, meaning the place beyond all misery, the place beyond birth and death. We have a little book, Beyond Birth and Death. So then this is your last birth. There's no more reincarnation. Because you're absolutely right. If Krishna consciousness was a material process, then you'd have to start cultivating it all again the next life. But it's not. It's dealing with the spirit soul. And therefore, the whole goal of it is to end, you know, this process of reincarnation and come forward in your original form, your original, deathless form, with spiritual senses, spiritual mind, spiritual everything. And no material covering. That means no death, no birth. That's the eternal world. So that's the promise of Krishna consciousness. And the method is given here in Bhagavad Gita, how to achieve that state. We're trying to achieve a state of consciousness. That's why it's the Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because it's your consciousness that counts. That's where you live. That's who you are. And if the consciousness is pure, then we don't need a material body to try to enjoy separately from the pure spirit. You see, that's the idea. What were you going to ask?
Yeah, in building an appreciation for devotional service and trying to welcome and open people up to the reality of it, I was just curious if you have any advice on how to there's the example I think Lord Chaitanya uses of the ripened fruit. Uh-huh. Maybe it's not Lord Chaitanya uses, but how do a lot of people they're too ripe or not ripe enough? I was curious if there's a way by which you can go about ripening
the fruits. Well, there's no one way. The point is that. Krishna consciousness is all attractive. It's attractive because it's the more that we can present Krishna to someone, the more they can be attractive to understand. Now, one of the most important ways is through the intelligence. That's why it's called Buddhi Yoga here. In other words, just the idea, just the concept that we ourselves are eternal and there's no death. To me, that's a very interesting thing. If I was just coming around and said, well, that's fascinating. If it's true, then that changes my whole perspective on life. If we just go around once, we're nothing but complicated, you know, a big mass of atoms and molecules, then it makes sense to be totally hedonistic, to try to enjoy as much as possible, because you're just going around once and then you're going to dissolve into atoms. You know, that's one possible scenario. But here's another one presented. No, you're not. You're not atoms and molecules. You're a pure spirit that doesn't die. So that kind of idea, you know, for the inquisitive mind, bears investigation. Right? Let's you know, see if that's true. And actually, the wonderful thing is there's even empirical proof for that. Empirical means something that we can understand without knowing anything about Bhagavad Gita. Because, after all, if we've had previous lives, then it stands to reason we might have some memory of them. Because, as I said, the whole idea is the mind doesn't perish. So the mind, we have the same mind, is carrying through from body to mind. Well, okay, where's the memory? Well, I can't remember my previous life. I don't know if anyone else in the room can. So, but there are evidences. There are cases of children before you get completely conditioned, you know, to your where they claim, you're not my mother, you're not my father, I belong to this village. You know, there's actually cases that have been investigated. A lot of it's in India, but it's in other places too. There's this one on YouTube of some middle American. Did you see it? Some kid grows up and suddenly he wants to play with planes all the time. Well, that's not unusual for a kid. But he knows about the planes. He knows the names of them. He insists that he was a fighter pilot and this and that. And they say, well, what is this kid? And it turns out that there's all of these things he knows about some fighter pilot, American fighter pilot who died in World War II. And you know, this central, you know, United States, straight-laced Methodist family or something, they finally, there's no other explanation for it, but that he's reincarnated as this guy. They did an investigation who died in this, you know, firefight in World War II in the Pacific. It's right there on YouTube. And, you know, you say, oh, yeah, well, maybe they hinted at it. No, they did all of these tests. There's no way that this kid could know all about this stuff unless he was actually that guy. And in India, you know, there's many cases investigated by Ian Stevens and others. What to speak of the old near-death experience thing, you know, where somebody's getting a heart attack in the hospital, you know, they're flatlining, you know, all the tube, you know, they're pounding on the chest, the electrodes and everything. And meanwhile, the person is observing it from the ceiling. And they know the doctor who came in, they can describe it. How did that happen? You know, they really don't have an explanation for it, other than that the soul is temporarily out of the body. And it always happens, but sometimes they die and they don't come back. They don't live to tell it, but sometimes they come back and they can tell. So anyway, if you want that kind of proof and indication, it's there. But besides that, there's no one way. The best way is simply to attract someone on the basis of the philosophy, the holy name, the culture, the beauty of it, and so forth, to pique a little interest. Because then once you get in the Sangha, then you can directly experience, you know, the power of the chanting and so forth. Ultimately, without the chanting of the holy name, none of this makes any sense. We have so many ideas in our head that can oppose this. You know, as Krishna says right in the second chapter, he says, Ashchayiva Pashi, that the soul is amazing. Sometimes they hear it, they see it amazing, they hear about it amazing, and even after hearing about it, they can't understand it all. You know, if you don't want to understand, if you you know, you won't. But if you're curious, if you're open to it, you know, due to previous exposure or something, you know, previous life, then it just seems like the most wonderful solution. It's actually the solution to all the problems, social, political, economic, personal, whatever you have. This is a solution, and you know, if you try it out, you'll experience it. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.